From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Welcome to Issues in the News. I'm Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard. Joining me on the show this week are Michael Williams, contributor to CBS Radio in Washington, and Barbara Slavin, acting director of the Future of Iran Initiative at the Atlantic Council and Washington correspondent for Al Monitor. And here are the issues. Hillary Clinton was nominated as the Democratic presidential candidate against Republican Donald Trump. She is the first woman to be nominated for president by a major political party in America. Bernie Sanders, Clinton's rival for the Democratic nomination, endorsed her, but some of his followers held back. Meanwhile, emails sent by the Democratic National Committee, released by WikiLeaks, showed party officials had been eager to undermine the Sanders campaign. Russia was widely blamed for hacking into the DNC system to obtain the emails, though intelligence czar James Clapper said no firm conclusion had been reached on who leaked the emails. And Donald Trump urged Russia or other countries to release the 30,000-plus emails that Clinton had deleted as private, non-work-related emails. Well, let's start with Hillary Clinton's speech ending the convention. We now think the campaign stands. Normally, candidates for president get a bounce. In other words, their polls go up as a result of the convention. What about Hillary and her candidacy and her speech in particular, Michael?
Well, certainly a historic moment that we witnessed with the first woman being officially the nominee of a major party. It was great to watch. Actually, as a person who watched what happened in Denver for Barack Obama, it was a similar moment to me in terms of historic. When you talk about the convention in general, it was done almost to perfection. I mean, this was a production that was, I believe, on point. So many great speakers, a combination of star power and gravitas. It really got the job done. Then you go and talk about Hillary Clinton's speech. Look, we know that she's not a great public speaker. I mean, there's some people who can sing, some people who can dance, and, you know, some people who sing and dance despite the fact that they can't, you know. And she's just not great at that. But as she has said, as other people have said, and as I have said, she is not a show pony. She is a workhorse. And I think that was the message that she got across in her speech. Mm-hmm. It was a combination of motivational, inspirational, aspirational, and confrontational. Mm-hmm. And I think those are all the points that you had to hit during that speech. She got them all. So for what she needed to do, I think she got it done. Lots of red meat for the Bernie supporters that she's going to get. And, you know, now she's got 100 days to make this thing kind of stick.
I thought the speech was not great, but it was certainly good enough.
Yeah, I mean, as she pointed out, after a lifetime of public service, she's still more about service than the public part. Mm-hmm. And I agree with Michael about the way the convention was choreographed. To me, I think the most affecting speakers were not necessarily Michelle Obama and Bill Clinton and Joe Biden, but the ordinary Americans. You know, they would do a video that would show the ordeals that these people went through, and then those people would come on the stage. So the mothers of the movement who had lost children to gun violence, mostly in the inner cities, the young woman, Anastasia Somoza, who was disabled, who had met Hillary 23 years ago when she was first lady, and when Hillary was fighting for education for children with disabilities. And most of all, on the final night of the convention, the one that just got me right through the heart was Hizr Khan, emigre from the United Arab Emirates, whose son Humayun died in 2004 in Iraq serving the U.S. military. And I thought he had some of the best lines. At one point, he talked about the Constitution, and he had a little copy of it in his pocket, and he pulled it out, and he said, "Mr. Trump, I don't think you even read this, but I'll lend you my copy." You know, talking about religious freedom, about what attracted him to this country to begin with. So these were really moving moments, and then, you know, it all built to the final climax. Mm-hmm. And for Hillary, I mean, this was a well-delivered speech. She didn't yell. There was a variation in tone, and there were some great zingers in it. My favorite, I suppose, I think everybody's, well, there were so many, but she quoted FDR, "The only thing we have to fear is fear itself." She presented a choice between two visions, one that's egotistic, authoritarian, dark, one that's communitarian, bright, optimistic. She talked about how she sweats the details of policy because they are a big deal to those who are affected by policies. And of course, the best line of all about whether you would trust the White House to some somebody who likes to tweet, whether someone who gets upset by a tweet is somebody who should have access to nuclear weapons. So all in all, I think she really delivered it well.
So it's fair to say you like the speech.
Yeah, I like the speech.
You know, here's what struck me about the convention. These conventions are always 4 days. There are Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And on Monday, there was great disunity among Democrats. There was a lot of dissent on the part of the Sanders people. But by Thursday, the Democratic Party seemed quite united.
Well, it seems so. You know, certainly when you go into Monday and to expect unity on that Monday is just foolish. It's not a news story if you mix batter and put it in the oven and 5 minutes later say cake not done yet. You know, that's not breaking news. There was some work to be done with there, and there's still some work to be done. But what needed to happen was, first, some conciliatory moves made towards both the Sanders supporters and to Bernie Sanders himself. And also an understanding and maybe an education of the Sanders supporters. Now, when you look at that group of people, you see a group of, and you hate to generalize with millennials, but let's face it, that's what the core of these people are, younger voters, many of whom are getting into the political process for the very first time. They are impatient, and at times it comes off as kind of petulance that's very off-putting to people who have been fighting for political issues for 20, 30, 40 years, and you have someone who has no background, certainly a lot of passion, a lot of patriotism, but not a lot of history and knowledge in what goes on with this, and saying, well, I've been in this thing for 18 months, and I want results now. And, it, you know, it comes off as a little bit silly, even. The Sanders campaign has been a party. We're saying it's been like a big party with purpose for a lot of young people, and God bless him, it's brought him into the process. But now it's time to decide if you're more interested in that party or the Democratic Party, because Bernie Sanders is not dead.
Yeah, he achieved a lot in terms of the platform. Hillary said Bernie's cause is our cause. I sort of see it like the guy who offers you ice cream and cake and the stern woman who says, eat your peas. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, Hillary is saying, eat your vegetables, and she's explaining how change is done. You know, yes, you need grassroots. You need tremendous passion. You know, I look back at, say, the anti-Vietnam War movement, and the demonstrations, the rallies were key. But you also need people on the inside who were working the process.
Absolutely.
And what she's promising is, I understand what you want. I understand these issues. Trust me to have the competence and the ability to work across the aisle in our very complicated system to get at least some of it done. You know, who offers the best chance of enacting their platform after all? Is it Hillary or is it Donald Trump?
I'd say neither.
Well,
platforms,
you know, we will see. But
don't mean much, but you're correct. Sanders did have a great impact on the Democratic platform.
He
no question
did.
About that. Right. Hillary Clinton entered the convention with some bad poll numbers, Michael. Mm-hmm. There was a Gallup poll that came out that showed that 57% of adults in America, registered voters, regard her unfavorably. There was another poll by CNN that showed that 68% felt that she was not honest or trustworthy. Did she deal with these things effectively?
She cannot.
In the
deal.
Convention.
In the convention.
Yeah.
Okay. So within her own party, yes, I think she did deal with some of that very, very well. She made the case that, look, I'm not Michelle Obama. I'm not Barack Obama. I'm not Bill Clinton. I'm not Joe Biden. But guess what? I don't have to be, because all those people are in the party already working for us, for you, and if I get to be president, for me to do the things that you want to do. So I think that she did very well there. I do think, though, that outside the party, it's going to be very, very difficult for her to change people's minds. There's a whole group of people, maybe 40% of the American populace, the electorate, has been raised to hate the Democrats and Hillary Clinton in particular. And Donald Trump is insulated from any type of backlash from the media, from the politicians, because they have been demonized already. So I don't know how you get to those people. I don't know how Donald Trump trips himself up, because they're so firmly entrenched. Mm-hmm. As one caller I heard say in a call-in political show, I'd vote for Donald Duck over Hillary Clinton.
I mean, it's
a laugh line, but it shows where a lot of people's minds are.
Yeah, let me tell you what I thought were the highlights of the convention. I thought Michelle Obama gave the single best speech. I thought Michael Bloomberg, the billionaire, someone who, like Donald Trump, is a billionaire, gave an extremely effective speech, highly critical of Donald Trump. Very good speech. Tim Kaine, the Virginia senator, is the vice presidential running mate of Hillary Clinton, and his speech was not great, but except when he did an imitation
of Donald Trump
mocking
believe
him
me,
by
yeah.
saying, believe me, believe me.
That was good.
And he went on with it. And it's one thing to attack Donald Trump. That may work. But if you can effectively mock your political opponent, then you're ahead. And he did a pretty good job there. The speech I wondered about, though, was President Obama's speech. Hmm. And I wondered about it for this reason. It seemed to say, well, Hillary will do the things that I didn't quite get to. And she's been trying to run as someone who's not just the third term of Obama, but is herself. On that point, I don't think he helped, Michael.
If you're all about change, which a lot of people think is what this election cycle is all about, then no. I mean, he's not necessarily about change. He is about moving forward. But as I said before, sometimes things take not an administration or two. It takes a generation or two to make them happen. So why should we not press forward with things when it's just not done yet? You know, don't necessarily change directions. I think that's the point that he made. When you talk about ranking the speeches, I agree with you, Michelle, was absolutely number one. It was marvelous.
Do you think she's going to run for office someday? I was in Philadelphia on a day. I talked to a bunch of foreign politicians and diplomats. And all of them remarked on her speech, and one woman said that's the first speech of her presidential campaign.
Many years ago, I was wondering whether Colin Powell was going to run when he was sort of the flavor of the day. And I saw him at the Kennedy Center practicing for a performance there that he was going to be emceeing. And during the rehearsal, he literally skipped across the stage to the podium, and everyone laughed. And I thought, that man's not running for president. Mm-hmm. He's too darn happy. And I think that
she'll be happy to get out of the White House.
I believe that she will at least take a break.
Well, let's see. They're going to live in D.C. I guess you could run for president from D.C., but if you're going to run for the Senate or something, you need to establish
only for a couple more years until their last kid is through school, and then they're back to Chicago. So.
Okay. Hillary Clinton is obviously extremely well-known. She was first lady to her husband, Bill Clinton, when he was president in the 1990s, and she was a U.S. senator for 8 years from New York. She ran against President Obama, then not president, but in 2008 for the Democratic nomination and lost, and then he appointed her Secretary of State for 4 years, and yet there seemed to be a huge effort at this convention, Barbara, to make people like Hillary Clinton. And she even commented on it at one point. I get it that some people just don't know what to make of me.
We know her because we've been around for a while and seen her ups and downs. But again, if we're talking about the new voters, particularly the Bernie voters, the millennials, they don't really know who she is. Even, you know, that she was Secretary of State. I mean, that was 4 years ago, and that's an eternity for some of these young people who are just tuning in now. And also, let's not forget that the Republican Party has done a very effective job of caricaturing her and over the last 25 years. So she did have to reintroduce herself to the American people.
All right. We'll have more in just a minute. First, a reminder that you're listening to Issues in the News, coming to you on the Voice of America in Washington. I'm your moderator, Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard. Joining me today are Michael Williams of CBS Radio, Barbara Slavin of Al Monitor, and this is a reminder that you can listen to Issues online as a podcast. The program is also available for free download on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/issues. Donald Trump got the bump you might get after a convention. Donald Trump, at least in the CNN poll, got a bump of 6 percentage points, which was not spectacular, but better than I expected. What about Hillary? I mean, this was, I think, a successful convention. Michael, do you think, is she going to get a bump? If she does, she'll have a lead.
Yes, I think she will get a bump. But I do still think that this is going to be probably a fairly close race because we do have this situation where the Trump voters are oblivious to any criticism, to any sort of foible or mishap or misstep that he might make. It almost doesn't really matter. I truly believe that in order for him to lose his core constituency, any part of it, it would have to be an open mic type of situation where he says something into an open microphone.
Yeah, like Romney did about the,
Michael,
the 47%.
Something like
but
even
Michael,
more egregious than that even.
Michael, he has to get past his core constituency. That's not going to elect him. It's not a majority. He's going to have to do better than that. I agree with you about his core constituency, but he's going to have to get beyond that if he's going to be elected.
I do think so. I mean, the election math for him is still pretty tough. When we're talking about Ohio, many people are saying that if he doesn't win Florida, he has no shot at all. Mm-hmm. So there are definitely some challenges.
That.
And then,
mm-hmm.
you know, when you talk about Florida, you talk about Latino support, and then you get back into the whole immigration issues. It's going to be a difficult thing, but as President Obama has said, it's not impossible. For anybody to take anything for granted in this election would be a huge mistake.
What about these emails? First, the emails, Barbara, from the Democratic National Committee, which were leaked by WikiLeaks. Democrats and many others blame the Russians for initially hacking into, or actually it's been reported at least one place that the Russians somehow got the password for the DNC. What about these things? They did show that a lot of officials at the Democratic National Committee were really on Hillary's side and at least wanted to undermine the Sanders campaign. There's not much reflection in those emails that showed that they did much.
They were very damaging. They forced the head of the DNC to resign, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, hours before the convention was supposed to begin, and there was, you know, a frantic reshuffling to find somebody else to gavel the convention into operation and so on. They confirmed what, frankly, Bernie supporters already knew, which was that the establishment wanted Hillary. But I think it contributed to the time it took for a lot of people to come around. As I mentioned, I was in Philadelphia for a day and ran into some Bernie supporters. One of them insisted to me that Bernie had won California and that they had not counted all the votes and that this was some conspiracy on the part of the,
I hadn't heard that one.
The Democratic establishment. He firmly believed this. There was this sense that, you know, we were robbed that was still pervasive in the hall and outside. So, you know, I think it was very damaging. But fortunately for Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump then took this incident and turned it into an advantage, I think, for her by another self-inflicted wound and by telling the Russians, go ahead, you know, hack away and give us those missing emails from the State Department.
That's not quite what he said. He didn't say hack into anything.
He said release.
Release.
Assuming that the Russians had them already
and,
you know, would dribble them out. So he thereby underlined this narrative that Putin, the leader of Russia, is on Trump's side and that he is inviting Putin to meddle in domestic American politics against Hillary Clinton, which caused, you know, screams of outrage. I think, frankly, that, as much as anything, will push many Republicans who are national security experts, people like Mike Hayden, former CIA director, to vote for Hillary because it was so astonishingly irresponsible.
What about that, Michael, and what might happen if these 30,000-plus emails were released? Hillary Clinton's campaign said, oh, this raises national security issues, but the Clinton camp had said that these emails had nothing to do with national security. They were only private emails.
When you talk about the emails from the DNC and having Debbie Wasserman Schultz forced out, look, this was something that was unfortunate. You don't like to see outside agents affecting U.S. elections. But again, no one likes to see how the sausage is made.
Right.
If you go back to the times where you had paper memos, you know, in paper memos, you would see these things. Hey, what about that Johnson guy or that Humphrey guy? Mm-hmm. You would see all of these things. Okay. This is just how it's done. So to be shocked and amazed that there's dirt on the floor in these things, you know, is I'm shocked to find there's gambling going on in this place. For Donald Trump, again, I say he makes himself available for ridicule on an almost daily basis with some of these things. However, he seems to be covered with Teflon for a lot of it, for most of his electorate. It remains to be seen how far he can go before it really hurts him. But it won't be by media reporting because he has already demonized the media.
Sure.
Every time he says something like that, he looks down at the front row of the press conference and says, now these guys are going to tell you that I just said something bad because they're all against me anyway. Okay? Insurance policy written.
Yeah, and you know, I've followed so many presidential campaigns. I've never seen one where a candidate gained from attacking the press. Now, a lot of them do.
I think Richard Nixon did pretty well.
No, I don't know.
Nattering nabobs of negativity.
Well, that was Spiro Agnew.
And not Richard Nixon. The line came from, that wonderful columnist for the New York Times.
William Sapphire.
William Sapphire wrote that line. Let's give him credit.
William Sapphire.
Great.
Now, Hillary, in her speech, one other thing that struck me was when she talked about investments in infrastructure and so on, she didn't talk about private investment. This was all government investment, government spending. Normally, when you're trying to boost the economy, you want the private sector to have some incentive.
She talked about small business. She talked about small business a lot.
I didn't think a lot. But in any case, what about this?
She talked about small business also. But actually, on this, she and Trump are on the same page. Both of them say that our infrastructure in the United States is a disgrace. And, you know, for the big projects, for the airports and the highways and the rail lines, and the bridges, the government has to come forward. But unlike Donald Trump, she talked about how she would pay for it. She says she's going to raise taxes on corporations and on the very wealthy, which is something Trump doesn't talk about. So you're left with essentially the same policy, but she's honest about how she would try to pay for it.
Michael?
I would agree with what was just said. I mean, I think that Hillary, by nature, goes into it and gives the details. She gives the reasons. She gives the whys and the hows. And I think that's when a lot of people's eyes glaze over, because they don't necessarily want to hear how you're going to do it. They just want to hear the promises. So that's how a Trump speech differs very much, you know, from a Clinton speech. She gives all the details. And I think, again, if you're going to say she's not for cooperating with business, then...
No,
okay,
I didn't say that. My point was she didn't talk about incentives for business. She may have talked about small businesses, but normally when you want to increase economic growth, you try to incentivize business, and it's not just based on government spending.
Yeah, I'm not going to put policy words into her mouth, and maybe that's not her intent. Maybe she doesn't intend to do it. But from what I've seen of her, I think she's pretty good with the whole public-private partnership thing. I mean, look at the foundation. I mean, it does pretty well with that.
Well, this was mainly public in her, rather than private.
She said she would penalize businesses that took jobs overseas, which is also something Trump has said.
Overlap there for sure.
What does Hillary Clinton need to do now? Now, after the convention, she was going to go out on a bus trip to Ohio and Pennsylvania, which, as I recall, her husband, Bill Clinton, and Al Gore, his vice presidential running mate, did after the 1992 convention, did to great success, Barbara.
Well, this is going to be interesting, too. And again, we'll know at the end of this whether you can run a campaign through big rallies and tweets, which is the way Donald Trump is doing it. Yes, they're going to go and they're going to do retail campaigning. They're going to take the bus and so on. She'll give interviews. She probably won't do press conferences, which she has not agreed to do. Of course, we have the debates coming up, which will be riveting, I'm sure. But she also has millions and millions of dollars of advertising that are going to be all over the airwaves in the battleground states, which Trump doesn't have the money for, frankly. And they will be taking bits from this convention, I'm sure, and from the convention, the Republican convention in Cleveland, and fashioning them into very, very effective advertising. So we'll know at the end whether you can run a campaign on the basis of rallies and 140 characters.
Trump also gets enormous, while attacking the press, gets enormous press attention.
Enormous. And free media. He'll get more, of course.
And he gets an enormous amount of free media, for sure. And I wanted to follow up on something that you said, Michael, because I agree with it, and that is, as we get into the real strong moments in the campaign, Democrats start with an advantage. All the states that Obama won, including Virginia, where I live, if Hillary wins all of those or even loses a few, she will still be elected president. Donald Trump really has to break into this coalition of states that Obama created, and I think that's the difficult part. We start out with more states that tend to vote Democratic than states that vote Republican in a presidential race.
The convention, the coming out party, you know, was the opportunity to work and build a ground game with the Republican National Committee and sort of get that ground game going, get that sort of ground politics going. I think that the convention was a disappointment. He's already distancing himself from it, by the way, and saying, well, I just showed up, you know, on the last day to give my speech. I had nothing to do with this.
So he showed up every day, actually,
declared
one
bankruptcy
way
now on the entire, the election math is very, very difficult. Hillary Clinton has to release the hounds. She's got a lot of workers out there. She's got a lot of talent in her party. Let them go do what they do and ride that wave.
Yeah, Barbara?
Yeah, when you think of the surrogates that she's going to have, Obama, Michelle, Bill Clinton, of course, her vice president, Joe Biden, Elizabeth Warren, and Bernie Sanders, plus, you know, half of Hollywood. I think she has an edge, but it's politics. Anything can happen.
You know, you raise this also, Michael, and I'm not sure. When people say this is a change election, I mean, that's a cliche. I'm not sure exactly what that means.
Assuming I do.
I'm going to give you a shot at it anyway.
Well, when people talk about change, I think they mean anything else but what's happening now. And largely the fact that we need change is no change from what we have. You know, we've had a few election cycles where people have insisted on sending people into Congress who have no experience and no desire to negotiate with the other side. And now they're unhappy with bad policies and gridlock. Well, okay. We talk about Washington people. As a native Washingtonian, I've always kind of resented that because all you people are from someplace else. Okay. Washingtonians in Congress.
Michael, you shouldn't take this personally.
I try not to. I try not to and try to be bitter about that. But, you know, it's a situation where change means the other, but I don't think it means demolition. And I think that's when you're talking about Donald Trump and the entire Trump way of doing things. That's beyond change. That's
Yeah.
Something else.
Michael, I knew you could handle that question. That's why I asked you. Anyway, that's all the time we have. Joining us today were Michael Williams, contributor to CBS Radio in Washington, and Barbara Slavin, acting director of the Future of Iran Initiative at the Atlantic Council and Washington correspondent for Al Monitor. This program was produced by Carol Castile. Our engineers were Wagner Roberts and Linus Rimkus. I'm Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard. Thank you for listening.